Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard. And I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down real low. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
This episode of The Instance is sponsored by the Nighthawk Pro Gaming Router from Netgear. Let's face it, network traffic and online connectivity matter, especially when you are gaming. Save the competition for the game and stop competing with your router's bandwidth. The XR500 Gaming Router creates an express lane just for your gaming, giving you incredible speed and no lag. Nighthawk Pro Gaming gives you the power to win. Visit netgear.com/npg and join the no-lag crew.
Hi, I'm Mike Morheim from Blizzard, and you're listening to The Instance.
The World of Warcraft podcast, so you don't have to. This is The Instance.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Instance. This is The Instance episode 537. It is October 5th, 2018. We're some 4 weeks or some such away from BlizzCon. And it's all very exciting. I'm Scott Johnson with Patrick Beja. Hello, good morning.
Hey, how's it going, Scott?
Oh, really good. Doing great. It's a big day, you know. We got a big week of stuff to talk about, except one of them's a little melancholy and not sad per se, but yeah, you know.
I like that you used the appropriate intro bumper thing.
Yeah, haven't used it in a while. Do I have to retire it now? Can I never use this again?
I don't know. You need to get one from Jeb. I can't remember if I'm the one who got you the Morheim one. Maybe I wasn't.
But I think you got me the Morheim way back in the day. That's like 09 or something.
Something like
08,
that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just you and me on today's show. Yeah. And that is because... we got our checks from Blizzard. We weren't going to do a show, and Blizzard was like, dude, we have some like controversial news. Yeah. You have to go out there and spin our everything our way. And we're like, sure, do you have the check? And they're like, yeah. And we kept all the money for ourselves, and Terpser and Garrett didn't get any.
No, they got nothing.
That's why it's just the two of us.
That's right. Also, it may be that Garrett's out of town and Terpster is always busy. That could be it, too. But sure,
okay,
it's
possibly.
Yeah, they're also lining our pockets, as everyone has assumed for all these years. We're just going to cop to it now. no, we will be talking about the Morheim exit. We'll be talking about that new World of Warcraft diary book that just finished its Kickstarter. I actually got an advanced copy. And also a bunch of other stuff, including some interesting BlizzCon tidbits. So I say, let's jump in. All right, so Mike Morheim. Here, I'll play this one more time in case I can never play it again.
Hi, I'm Mike Morheim from Blizzard, and you're listening to The Instance.
Oh, never going to play it again? Probably. Well, I mean, maybe I still will. I play Greg Streets all the time. It's fine.
That's true. That's true. It's like the memorial. Well, he's doing well. We shouldn't like.
Yeah.
I know this is going to sound like some kind of eulogy, but go ahead. Say what's happening.
All right. So here's
some people might not.
Yeah. Some people may not be aware. I can't imagine anyone listening to the show doesn't know about this. But Mike Morheim, the co-founder of Blizzard, 27-year career as co-founder and president. Although I'm not sure when that president title actually kicked in, but for all intents and purposes, he was always sort of there, is stepping down as president of Blizzard Entertainment and has done so via a relatively formal letter to the community, basically saying it's time. 27 years is a long time, and it's time to pass the torch. He says this in his letter, quote, "After many years of working with some of the industry's most talented people to create games and worlds for you to play in, I've decided it's time to, for someone else to lead Blizzard Entertainment. I will now serve as an advisor to the company that I so love and admire. My duties as president of Blizzard will be assumed by my friend, colleague, trusted advisor, and longtime steward of World of Warcraft, J. Allen Brack." He also went on to say, "It has been an honor to serve this community for over 27 years, and I thank you for many years of support. I look forward to being a member of the community alongside you. See you on Battle.net." Where I presume he'll spend all his time in StarCraft. That's just my assumption. because he loves that StarCraft.
Probably.
He, yeah, so this came out, what, yesterday, day before? I forget now. This week's a bit of a blur. Was it Wednesday or was it Thursday? It was Thursday.
Between the two.
Yeah, whatever it was. And it kind of came as a big surprise to everybody, including, I mean, I have some voices within Blizzard, and they, many of them were surprised, although some were, felt like this was perhaps a thing that would be coming sometime soon. 27 years is a long time. Let's lament the fact, though, Patrick, that because he would have been the oldest continuously employed person at Blizzard, we were this close to knowing what the 30-year employee prize thing was. And now we're never going to find out. We don't know.
I'm sure there are some other people that are getting close to that 30 years. I'm. It won't be that long unless they also quit. Although, you know, I don't know. He might get an honorary because he's still going to be an advisor. Maybe he's going to be employed still by the company. It's possible.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, this is really, it was a little bit unexpected. You're right. I think these kinds of things you don't tell anyone, like anyone, even your closest friends at the company, because that can leak and it can affect stock price and stuff like that if there's some uncertainty. So I'm pretty sure this is drafted between like four people, maybe a little bit more, and no one else knows.
Sure.
But beyond the business considerations, you know, Morheim is a relatively visible person in the company. But not as much as some of the people from the game teams and the game directors. And I think he is kind of a uncelebrated hero of the, especially the WoW era.
Mm-hmm.
I think every good game company has someone at their head that is a real gamer and that knows how, what people want and how to create quality products. And certainly Blizzard's method for making tons and tons of money, as we always joke about, is to make the best games they can. And of course they're there to make money, but their method is to make awesome, accessible, easy to understand games. But beyond that, there was one thing that happened to Blizzard that I think very few companies have to deal with, and that was, of course, the success of World of Warcraft. It was a time when it would have been very easy for the company to lose its soul. And at that point, I think the company spent, I would say, the better part of 5 years, maybe a little bit less, scaling to the point where they could handle that enormous game. And during that, you know, I don't know how much it grew, but it's like multiple times what it was in every aspect. And Morheim, I think, is the one we have to thank for keeping the company culture, which is incredibly precious and hard to maintain and conserve, within Blizzard. You know, he's the soul of that company. Almost, I mean, obviously I don't want to make the Apple comparisons, but he's someone that I think is very important for the company to stay what it is. And that's something most people don't really think about. I think, understandably, some people will say, I got those types of reactions on Twitter when I mentioned this, and some people were saying, well, you know, Blizzard really isn't the same Blizzard it was back when we had Warcraft and Diablo, and obviously it's not the same. They went full on game as a service, and they had a lot, you know, business-wise, they moved with the industry. I think this is as much a factor of the industry as it is a factor of Blizzard, but I think it's also fair to say that they love games. They make very successful games. Most of them are incredibly successful. They're willing to shut things down when it's not working. And this is very true to what Blizzard was before WoW. So yeah, overall, I think Morheim is a key figure for that aspect of the company. And it's not easy. It could very well have gone another way.
I completely agree. And I want to emphasize and sort of get into his overall impact and legacy real quick. This has been on my mind since the announcement was made. You're right that he was often willing to let designers, storytellers, and others take center stage quite a bit. But behind the scenes, and by all accounts, it really was Mike's vision all these years. And those principles and those mottos that they always talk about were primarily his and his co-founders, and they stayed throughout the history of the company. But here's a guy for 27 years who has somehow managed through that kind of incredible growth in their midterm, been able to maintain that company, to grow it at a rate that makes sense, to retain most of the time jobs that other developers shed. When other developers make a game, release it, and let it go, they sometimes chop off half their staff and wait around for the next thing. They were never compromising when it came to release dates. They were never compromising on the amount of work they thought it would take to make a game great, and if it wasn't, they would drop it. I think that goes back to the core of who they were when it was just three of those guys, and I think that he is a principal part of that. Not only that, it's hard to describe or find another video game company with this level of legacy. And you could say, well, Scott, what about something like the doctors over there at,
BioWare.
And I would say to you, yeah, that was, they were well on their way to that kind of legendary status, but stuff got in the way. They sold EA. Things got watered down. That studio's really weird now. The doctors left. They came back. Then they left again in apparent disgust. That kind of thing happens more often than not in this industry, and yet you can always gaze just over to the right over there at Blizzard, and they aren't doing that. They keep people there. Like, there's been a lot of talk the last few days going, oh, what do you think about all these people leaving Blizzard? Brode this year, and then this thing, and then Metzen before that. I don't think people are actually paying attention to the what normal churn is and what uncomfortable, bad for the business churn is. Bad for the business churn is making a game and then letting everybody go, or not telling them that things are rough and suddenly giving them all the cut without severance, like this whole Telltale thing that just happened. Like, that's the more common story. That story isn't a Blizzard story. Over at Blizzard, retention, they have better retention. I guarantee you, I say this without numbers in front of me, but I would be willing to put $200 on this bet that nobody in the business has their level of retention, loyalty, and or creative staying power. Doesn't mean people don't go and people don't come. That's business. But Blizzard has always stood there like a rock and held steady and pushed forward and stuck to their guns, and in a way that has made the rest of the industry jealous, try to chase it, and not follow the same principles to get there. I think he is primarily responsible for that. I think it's his vision that brings that. And I think anybody and is working on his late 50s who has done that much for that long for a company deserves a nice retirement. So I am 100% happy for him. I think it's awesome. He gave us a great thing. And if you're all sitting around, if any of you are sitting around, a few people in the chat room are doing this going, I think this is Bobby Kotick's idea over at Activision. They're finally putting the screws to him. Like, all these conspiracy theories are hokum majokum. They don't apply. And I think you're all wrongheaded to go that direction. I know it's fun to go down that way, have that narrative, have that story. That isn't what this is. They are in a really good position right now. Go ahead.
You know what Kotick likes? I think, I don't know the guy, but I suspect he likes money.
Yeah.
And Morheim was making a lot of money for him at Blizzard. And you might have argued these kinds of things back when Diablo was in trouble and Titan was canceled. But now, with, you know, Hearthstone being the success that it is, even though it's been a while, it's still pretty successful, and Overwatch being the success that it is, and Diablo, you know, for whatever, probably being introduced at BlizzCon, I think Kotick is pretty happy with Morheim leading the company. But I think even more interesting than that is trying to understand what the new Blizzard is going to be, because, as I said, the head of the company is always a hugely important figure and influential figure in the way that the company behaves. Mm-hmm. And Brack, you know, a few years ago, there would have been other, and maybe this is super inside baseball industry, and people are not going to care, but let's talk about it for 2 minutes. There would have been other people that would have been the obvious choice for replacing Morheim. There was, you know, people like Paul Sams, who left, Pardo, who probably was sacked because of Titan. We don't know that for sure. Yeah. But that's the point where Kotick maybe had a hand. This is speculation, but I guess. Anyway, Pardo left. And now there's not a lot of people that would be a natural successor. I don't think a Metzen would ever have been a successor. You know, this is a job of management. It's not something creative and fun. Even though you take part in those decisions, your day-to-day stuff is probably about, you know, that office needs to be relocated and you need to make a legal decision on this and that and whatever.
Yeah, I can confirm, by the way, having had a side conversation about this switchover, he would absolutely not have been anyone who would wanted this job. Let's just put it like that. Because why would you, dude? You want to make worlds and characters and cool stuff. You don't want to go, the stock price has done this, therefore, blah, blah, blah. Nobody wants to do that stuff, except, you know, someone has to, I guess, but he didn't want
to. And the really difficult thing is that you need someone who is good at those things and who also understands and has respect for the gaming community. And certainly Morheim started out as a gamer, and we all saw those pictures, you know, of them sitting around in the office playing Magic and all of those. But I think Brack is, I mean, I met the guy a few times, for those who might not know, I don't know who would be listening to this and doesn't remember, but still, ethical disclaimer, I used to work for Blizzard for a few years in the EU offices, so I didn't have a lot of contacts with the US people, but I met Brack a few times. He doesn't seem super fun to me. He doesn't seem like a fun guy. Maybe it was, you know, just my experience with him who was like that, but he is the production director. He's the
connective tissue between executives and World of Warcraft, and so, you know, directives that come from on high happen there, that sort of stuff.
He does a little bit more than that. He's basically, my understanding is, and I might be mistaken, but he's the product lead on WoW. He manages everything. So Hazekostas and others before him were the game director. They were taking care of the entire game aspect. Brack, for a long time, it's been over 10 years, he's been managing the product and the whole thing, meaning issues with servers, additional servers, changing technology, making sure you have enough CS people, all of those side things to the actual build of the game were being managed, you know, product, you know, figurines and like all of those. He was obviously, the game director has a say in this as well, but Brack was the big boss in the WoW product team. And this seems to me like it's probably the perfect intersection between serious managerial stuff that means you can probably run a company if you have some help, because, you know, in the beginning, at least, it's not the same job, and being actually a gamer and being concerned with what gamers need and sometimes want. He's going to get some help. I think Ray Gresko, who's been on the WoW team for a long time, I think he went to Overwatch, I'm not sure. And someone else. Oh, right. Alan Adham, who was one of the founders of the company and who joined back a couple of years ago and was heading that internal incubator of new games for the company, is also apparently coming to the top of the company to help Brack in his new role.
Yeah, he's got now executive VP status or whatever. I mean, it's important to remember too. Adham was the founder. It was his idea.
Brought on the other guys.
Yeah, he brought on him, and he brought on Frank Pierce, and that's, there's probably a very interesting story to be told there, generally speaking. But
And Frank Pierce, I didn't even mention him for the obvious successors. I'm guessing, I don't know for sure. Maybe he just doesn't want the job. Pierce doesn't seem to me like he's a people person. I've often joked about this. I don't know why. Maybe he just didn't want the job, but it's very possible. Yeah. But we'll have to see how it actually goes. Maybe things go wrong and it's not as successful as it could be. But it seems to me like Brack is, he's a serious dude. Like, he knows his stuff, and he's not a game designer. I I don't think that's his training. But he's close enough to the games, just like Morheim was, that he understands what is what they imply, what they mean. So I think it's probably a good choice.
Yeah, I agree.
So yeah,
I think he's probably as good a choice as you're going to ask for. This will be a good a test for him. I want to address one other thing. Someone in the chat room, let's see, Smidian says, I think it's just painful to see the old guard leave. I agree. It is. And the reason it is it's a connected thing. It's because they're great at this. It wouldn't be a big deal. You know, like nobody blinks an eye when they find out that, oh, a guy who worked on just Far Cry 3 left. Nobody cares. Because that's that part of the industry is this big churning thing, and it's fine, and nobody really thinks about it. Someone leaves Blizzard, and it is impactful. Brent Broad leaves, and you go, oh, man, that's a stinger. He's great. We love. Well, why? Well, that's because they're so good at what they do and so good at establishing themselves as such a gold standard in this business that when somebody big leaves or even small leaves those organizations, you feel the impact of it. I feel it when a community team member leaves and goes somewhere else. Like, I had a really hard time with, like, Jonathan and Mike, Micah and all those guys left. Like, that's hard because they are a different breed. It's a level above. It's a cut above. Like, it's just hard to describe it in any other way. So I just want people out there to just don't be all into that whole, like, don't spend a week going, Blizzard's going to hell in a handbasket. They can't even keep Morheim. Knock it off.
No one's doing that.
Oh, there are people doing that. I'm not setting up a straw man here. There are people doing that in my Twitter feed who are saying that they think this is just like something's going, there's something rotten in the core, and that's why people are leaving. And I realize we live in a society where this is a fun thing to do now, and it's a narrative everybody likes to hop onto, but knock it off, because it's silly.
I mean, if anyone was leaving for that reason, it wouldn't be Morheim. Anyway,
not Morheim. Doesn't matter. Guy was there 27 freaking years. And hopefully, in an advisory role, we will find out what that 30th year thing is. I'm very excited about that, whatever that may be. if you do yourself a favor, go to the website. I was showing a few on the stream there, but go to the 20th anniversary Blizzard site. They still have up and available, and it will show you a ton of old photos of those guys in those very early years. And man, it brings back memories, like the launch of Lost Vikings and stuff like that. It's just crazy. Quick note, I got a copy of that new World of Warcraft diary book that just finished its Kickstarter. The author sent me a preview copy to talk about on the show. I just got it, so I haven't had time to really dig into it. I'm already super stoked, though, because there are some things just with a cursory flip through that caught my eye. I love understanding kind of like the underpinnings of what we all just assumed was, oh, here's a dungeon. Here's the first dungeon. Here's the first 40-man raid or whatever it may have been back in the day. But then to just peek under the cover and go, oh, my gosh, that took them 4 months of 24-hour days straight eating pizza on the floor nights just to get that finished. And the server guys didn't leave for 6 days straight because they were worried about how stable it was getting. Like, all of that, those kinds of things are so interesting to me. You know, why there are no gondolas in... can I make a clarification? Everybody got all on top of me on the show because I said there were supposed to be gondolas originally in Stormwind, which according to this book is true. I presumed it was the kind of gondola that hangs from wires and goes from pole to pole, kind of like in a ski resort. And everybody cheesed me saying, no, you mean those boats.
That's not a gondola.
It is a kind of gondola. It is. Although you say gondola, I say gondola. But here, I'm going to prove it now because I'm sick of everybody saying it. It's I think I'm all defensive today. There is a gondola in the water, and there is a gondola in the sky. And there is also other kinds of gondolas as well. I went down a deep rabbit hole on this. So everybody out there, including Patrick apparently, who thinks that gondolas can't be suspended in the air.
Well, I think that's a language thing. I just Googled, and indeed, there are some in the air.
See? Told you.
you were right, Scott, once again.
Oh, my gosh. I meant to just bring that up because I just got so much cheese for it while I was out of town last week. by the way, hi to everybody who showed up for the little instance panel-y thing we did. Hammaker and I there in Ohio. It was really nice seeing you guys, and thank you for hanging out with us. That was great. All right. Let's get into some game stuff.
Ooh, if you want, if you, if, if you want more about John Stats, the author of the World of Warcraft Diary, we interviewed him on the Icy Veins podcast. So go back a couple of episodes and you'll hear him discuss his time in the WoW team in his own voice.
There you go. And he was very nice to send that. So thank you again for that. And only other question I wanted to talk about real quick about the Morhaime exit was the timing of these things. They always seem to, because Blizzard has this yearly celebration get-together giant thing known as BlizzCon that we're all headed to. When that happens, it's usually, it feels a little strange to have this happen so close to that. So I guess what I'm asking you is, do you think, people asked this with Metzen, and I knew there was no way it was going to happen then, but do you think there's any way Mike does some little stage, get up there, say goodbye one last time, that sort of thing? Or do you think... You think we're done?
I think it's possible. I think it would actually galvanize the community, if only for PR purposes, like for communications purposes. I think having, I mean, he's still an advisor, so he could, in theory, do it every year. But at least this year, with everyone knowing that he's leaving his post, having him come out, say a few words, introduce Brack, I think it would be a really good way of passing the torch for the community. So yeah, I think it's very possible. So
all right, we'll see if he does. I would like to hear him say hello BlizzCon one more time.
I think if he does, he's gonna get the hugest, biggest, enormousest cheer that he's ever had.
If he wants like a standing ovation of epic proportions, this is the year to do it.
I think so.
Yeah, that would be something. I really hope he does. I think it's a different thing for him than others. Like I think pulling the Band-Aid off with Metzen was smart. He just would have been, he said in his own words, he would have been an emotional mess up there trying to say goodbye to that world during that time. It was a hard cut for him to leave. And so this one, he's staying on as an advisor. You know, I just think he could do that and get away with it and everybody would lose their minds. I think that'd be fantastic. So if he doesn't, in theory, J. Allen Brack opens the ceremonies this year. Like,
maybe, it's maybe Brack. It's maybe someone else. Trying to think off the top of my head now. Who's in charge of Diablo? I don't even know anymore.
Yeah.
No, I guess Brack would make sense. But again, Brack coming out without being known by the community at all, I think would be weird.
Yeah. Well, he was on stage last year. Alone. Last year he was on stage and he announced Classic, didn't he? He was like the Metzen last year.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And he had this whole shtick about him liking vanilla, and that was really fun. I mean, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it's going to happen. I think it would be more natural if... Morhaime introduce it, but maybe they want to do a clean cut. It's possible as well.
90s ponytails coming back, everybody. That's what we're saying here. And that's our prediction.
That would be like haircut wise. He's not the stylishest.
You think he'll cut it? You think he loses the pony? Or
no, never. Why? Okay. It feels like I don't know the guy. It feels like it's his pride and joy.
Yeah. It's part of him. If you cut it, it'll hurt. It'll actually cause pain. His nerves are in
possible.
It. All right. Everybody complain. If there's a complaint in World of Warcraft right now, it's that nobody likes the way Azerite power and Azerite gear have gone thus far. I think it's probably their number one thing. And Blizzard seems to have sort of acknowledged this and also wanted to let us in on what they're doing. So the biggest issues, according to Blizzard, and they say they agree with a lot of this, and they give us some responses. They say the biggest issues are overall availability. There is plenty of Azerite armor in the 295 to 340 item level range. Further sources are heavily limited and susceptible to bad luck. Even players who are doing a wide range of high-end content are still wearing at least one item level 340 piece, despite having replaced all of their other gear several times over. Everything else about the system is basically irrelevant if you can't get your hands on the gear in the first place. That's a chief complaint. Second complaint is lack of agency. When items do drop, it can feel like you're not really given much in the way of options. You can choose whether you want this to be a fire or frost piece or a versatile one or a generic trait, but that isn't necessarily an interesting choice, I would agree. And when you look at the complete package, those choices don't often feel like they're having a meaningful impact on how you play your character. often I'm just still like, oh, better eye level, numbers are greener, I'm putting that one on. Like, I don't even think about
it. It's a problem as well. I don't think they address it here, but the fact that you can get an item that you want the trade for and it's lower level. I mean, the dichotomy between the trait and the item level is problematic, because then it means you might not be able to use the item you want.
Right. So. Right. And then you also get into this. Some people are really doing the math, are hardcore about like, oh, okay, I got to swap my shoulders out before this raid, because that's exactly where this trait is better. But then when I'm out doing world content, I'm switching back to this other thing. And oops, I sold it. And oops, I got to find a vendor to buy it back. Like, it's just weird. Like, it's just weird. That stuff's all weird. It does say that the final thing was trait depth. Several of the traits that are considered the best mathematically turn out to be some of the simplest mechanically, which reinforces the sense that the system isn't really affecting gameplay. And they say, we agree that those issues need to be resolved. So here's the changes we're working on. I'm not going to read this word for word because it's long. Patrick and I don't want to be here all day. But they say they need to make Azerite armor more available. I think that would be great for all types of players. It says, though a method, through a method anyone can utilize. So we're actually looking at emissary rewards for that. So that's interesting to me. I think emissary rewards are a great untapped place for getting the big business done. For those who aren't just doing nothing but raiding, it would be nice to log in and go, all right, well, what does Queen Latifah need today? I'm going to go I'm gonna go do her four things. I'm going to go back to town, talk to her, and she poops out some rad new gear. That'd be great. And you do get some of that.
It's Regina Phalange.
Rocking it in Zandalar. They say, when we add new Azerite armor and what we're calling BFA Season 2, they say this starts with Siege of Zoldazar and corresponding Mythic Plus and PvP seasons. We're going to add another outer ring to those pieces of gear that have two spec-specific trait options for each spec. So that is something that's happening. And that is basically to say this, it effectively means that your favorite traits will be available on a lot more items. We're also going to continue to work on the individual traits themselves. And this has been one of the big complaints. It's like, well, at least make it look cool. Or I like...
They're boring. The traits are boring. I was hoping it was going to be like legendary gear from Legion. It's really not. It's like, your fireball does 2% more damage.
Yeah. Awesome. It's a lot of stats, and that's fine. Mm. People like stats. Better numbers are good. But this was an opportunity to perhaps do more. I mean, the most exciting one I have is a horde banner flops down next to me, and I have better haste for like 30 seconds or something. I forget what the trade is. But it's this
that
one.
At least, you know, it the way the stat increases is kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them are just a buff, right?
Right, so. Right. So... anyway, expect that to be more dynamic. And they said some of those changes won't be coming until Tides of Vengeance, which will be on the PTR soon. But the overall availability of Azerite armor is much more pressing concern to us. So we're investigating ways to hotfix that directly into the live game. Go on to say, I don't think we have a solid timeline for when that might be just yet, but we'll definitely have more information to share as soon as we confirm when that can happen. So a good response to a growing sense that Azerite gear and the Azerite gear trait system is a little busted, and they have ideas, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's really a tough one, because the community is up in arms, and I think very often the community gets up in arms about things that they shouldn't, you know, that aren't really that big a deal. In this case, I think the system is definitely not working. The thing it reminds me of is the garrison system back in Warlords, where we all agreed it was, you know, after the first month of excitement, we ended up realizing that it was a little bit tedious. In this case, for other reasons, I think it's fair to say that the system is not achieving what, you know, the design was hoping it would achieve. It's not really exciting. There are issues with progression in items, all of that. The community is really angry, and I think the community is great at finding, that's what I said on the ICV podcast a couple of days ago. The community is really good at finding issues within the game.
Mm-hmm.
What it's less great at is, finding solutions.
Mm.
And very often we as a community suggest things that are very simplistic or that address things superficially or that just turn back the clock. I know a few people suggested, well, just remove the traits from the gear and just put them back on the artifact, essentially the neck piece, and make that universal for the progression, universal for all specs. So essentially what you have is, the progression universal for all specs, and then you have different traits on for your different specs.
Right.
But what that does is it transforms the whole system into artifacts from Legion. And the company, the game has to evolve. You have to have new systems, new different things. And sometimes it doesn't work out and you try to fix it. And those fixes can't be implemented in, you know, as fast as the community wants it. So that creates the really strong, when the systems are actually not working out and the community realizes, which is very often, that's when these huge moments of tension actually surface between the developer and the community. And here we had also an issue of, you know, the communication being perceived as condescending.
Yeah.
For one post, I think it was Lore.
Right.
And honestly, when you read the post, it's like, yeah, maybe he was a little bit tired, but it really doesn't feel like he was, like, he was mostly agreeing with what was said in the post he replied to. So anyway, those moments of friction are when the community feels like the developer is, you know, working against them,
right,
almost.
Right.
And I think it really stems from a lot of misunderstanding of how these things can be fixed and the timeline on those.
It's hard also it's hard to gain tone from those posts, just like it is from any social media or forums or whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't blame, you know, if Lore is required to put smiley faces after every line, like we need to be better at interpreting that stuff and not just jump to the conclusion that they're exacerbated with our attitudes.
Well, I mean, so I also think, you know, Lore has been with the company for, what is it, 2 years now?
Two or three, something like that.
Two or three. And I think he came at a really good time because the community was super happy with Legion. I think overall, of course, there are issues and everything, but overall, everyone was really happy.
Yeah.
So I think it's the first time he's seeing the real wrath of angry gamers. So I, you know, not to put everything on the community, I think it's also fair to say maybe he should have been like extra careful with the way he was phrasing things. I know it's unfair to require this of community managers, but maybe it's necessary when you address angry gamers where every single comma can be misinterpreted as you piling on and, you know, making fun of the community.
Yeah.
Maybe that's true. But anyway, overall, I think this is really hard to handle. And there's no good, like, there's no way you're going to fix the problem until you actually fix the problem.
Right.
And that takes weeks and months.
So
it's a rock and a hard place situation where no matter what you say, the community is going to find a way to be angry with you.
Yeah.
I think overall, the latest details they've given on how they want to fix it, I think finally now we're at a place where the community feels like the company understand the magnitude of the issue with this itemization system, and the reactions have been, I think, mostly positive to those announcements. So maybe we're coming to a place where it's relatively peaceful again, but it's going to be a few more weeks or months until it's implemented. And until then, I think people are going to be very unhappy. For I understand it's a real issue, but it's also a real issue that affects a relatively small part of the game for a relatively small part of the community. And people might be angry at me for this, but I think there's a little bit of hyperbole in that anger as well, which is not uncommon. For
Are you saying in the gaming world, gamers can have hyperbolic sometimes? Is that what you're telling me? I don't know if I can believe this. This
well,
is crazy.
I mean, and I don't want to diminish the impact of this for people who actually live and breathe in this game. You know, if you're a Mythic Raider, every piece of gear that you get has to be a best in slot or close to it. So when you can't get those items that you can use, it's a real problem for you. And you feel like you are the best customer for that company. Genuinely, you know, justifiably so, but yes, maybe a little bit of hyperbole about the world ending and Blizzard not caring about anything and them being, you know, the usual stuff.
Well, Corpse Dancer in the chat room a while ago said, summed this up pretty well, and I think this leads me to a quick question I have before we move on, which is this. He says, when you replace something as awesome as artifact weapons were with unexciting, quote, chance to gain X for X seconds, unquote, it's going to be poorly received. I think that kind of boils it down. I think artifact weapons were really, really something else, and were so with their they had their own issues. We had our own complaints about number of problems when it came to Azeroth power and kind of how long it took in the late game to get where you needed to go and the time gating and all that. We had complaints, but that was a very ambitious game portion of that game. Very, very ambitious. So it's natural for all of us to see what we have now and go, oh, well, this is a step back from that. And it is. I mean, I'll straight up say it. It's a step back from that. I don't know if they meant it to be a step back.
Yeah, the system is not
back.
Working. It's, right. I think it's clearly not working.
Yeah. So Corpse Dancer, smart.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the problem isn't this. The problem is, what do you do when you realize it? Do you go back to the system from before, or do you try to fix the system that exists now? And I think if you go back to the system from before, you have a real, real danger of making the game stale, because you get to a point where everything is relatively okay and you don't upset anyone by continuing what you've been doing for the last one or two or three expansions. But if you don't add in anything new, the game becomes stale slowly and people get bored, maybe without a bang, without a roar, but people start trailing off.
Yeah.
And it's immensely important for the game to change in significant ways. And sometimes it's going to work out, sometimes it's not. Hopefully, when it doesn't, they find ways of fixing it in within the life cycle of this expansion. Mm-hmm. I think for Garrisons, arguably, they didn't fix it until the end of Warlords. So hopefully it will go better for Azeroth gear. But you can't ask companies to keep creating the same systems over and over again, because you'll very quickly get bored of them.
So. Yeah, I it's easy for us to say in the middle of this that we wish it was Azeroth weapons again, but I don't think that's true. I think we would have our other complaints.
Hopefully they can make Azeroth gear exciting and have traits that are fun and weapon, level progression that is motivating. Mm-hmm. That's how you fix it.
Yeah.
It's not by recreating what we had in the old expansion.
But it did make me want to ask this question. And I'm not trying to create my own level of hyperbole with this question. But I'm going to ask it anyway.
All right.
Have we had enough expansions now that we can kind of make a Star Trek movie scenario here where it's at least somewhat, I don't know if it's not really objective, but let's say somewhat objectively say that Blizzard has an every other problem going on. Vanilla, amazing. BC, it's all right. Wrath
what?
Of the Lich. Hold
BC
on,
was
hold on.
Amazing.
BC
what
was good. I'm
about?
Not saying it was bad. It's good.
Okay.
Then you got your Wrath of the Lich King. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Cataclysm. Eh, it was good. It's all right. It was all right. Panda Town. Amazing in the end. I love that expansion. Honestly, there's a very, very soft, comfortable spot in my heart where Pandaria exists. I loved that expansion.
So, I think most people now agree.
Yes. I think it took them a minute because they were like, pandas what? And then Blizzard proved that you could do it. And that's great. Okay. So then you had that. Then Warlords. Ugh, rough. The rough business. Legion. Killed it. BFA. Meh, so far. I'm saying, if you look at that pattern, we've got an every other going on. I'll bet you whatever's after this is going to be the one where people go, oh my gosh, I can't believe how good the WoW still is. And it'll be the one after that they'll go, oh, it's all right. We're having a good time, but it's not the greatest thing in the history of the world. Like, I think they're having one of those. That pattern's happening.
It's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible. I think you're forcing the pattern a little bit with BC. I think BC was great. It wasn't just, there were so many things that changed and that were great with BC, but okay. Cataclysm, yeah, definitely it was not the most loved. It is not the most loved expansion, and Warlords is certainly sore for many people in the long run. It was great when it first launched, yeah. And I think this one, you know, that's why when we first got into BFA, I was very happy with the leveling. But what I said was, we'll have to wait and see if it holds up. And it might not. Mm. Well, I don't know.
Time will tell, right? Time will tell. Yeah, that's how it works.
It will.
We won't know till later. All right, real quick, we know the schedule for BlizzCon. It's kind of what you expect it to be. There are a couple of standouts, I think, though. For example, right after the opening ceremonies, there's a little something on that same Mythic stage called Diablo What's Next. I wonder if there'll be a Diablo announcement. You know, I've gotten to the point where my prediction is 100% already assumed to be true. So let's forget about that for now. Let's go deeper. Let's go meta on this. I think the game's called Diablo Eternal. That's my personal pick. I'll bet that that's the name. I have no inside knowledge on this. I am just pulling it out of my butt. So if that game's not called Diablo Eternal, that's the new bet, because at least there's a challenge there. Otherwise, we're getting whatever's
Eternal?
Next.
Because you like the title of Doom Eternal?
No, I forgot Doom's doing that. Shoot. that may screw up my chances. I didn't think about it. But the reason I feel this way is it's not going to be 4. At least this is my bet. Now, if I'm wrong, fine, I'll eat crow. But I think that they are, you know, Diablo, the future of Diablo is game as a service of some kind. I'm not saying it's an MMO. I'm not even saying it follows exactly what Path of Exile has found to be successful. I'm just saying whatever that is, that'll be Blizzard's version of the future of Diablo. And they won't just simply call it 4. It'll have to have a name like Eternal or, you know, some word like that. That's very evocative of the game, but also means we're going forever, and it's just going to be a game forever. And so whatever that is, that's my prediction. And then the next day, there's a panel called Diablo World and Q&A. World. Patrick, what do you think world means?
That there's a world that, no, it's not World of Diablo as in an MMO.
No. I just mean that we know since we don't know about a new game, clearly they're talking about the world of a new game, because we know what the world is on the old game.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. No, I think it's definite. I mean, there's no question there's going to be a new Diablo game. My knowledge guess would be change of perspective. Maybe it would be a third person Diablo.
Oh,
like, think God of War.
I don't know. They'd be messing.
Think God of War.
I mean, I think about God of War all the time, so I'm with you there.
There you go.
But I think
God
that
of War, Diablo, Destiny type, always online, you know, hub. I don't know. Who knows? I think you're right. I would suspect it's probably not going to be called Diablo 4. Yeah. But maybe
it's not going to be third person, though. I will bet you right now, no third person video game. Not a chance. No way.
I mean, behind the shoulder, because essentially isometric top down is third person.
Well, yeah, that's true. It's more godlike, though. But I guess
it's going to be. You mean it's going to be the classic third person? You think it's going to be just an action RPG looter?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a looting action RPG, because that's where it's rooted. I mean, they could never go so far as to change the fundamental way that game plays or controls. I mean, they'll enhance it and change it, but prediction
it's gonna be what Diablo has always been, except with better graphics and maybe slightly different systems.
Maybe even vastly different systems, but
okay,
just not that thing has to stay isometric until the end of time. I really that feels so crazy to do that. Now, people in the chat are like, "Yeah, it worked really poorly for GTA." Now, hold on a second, Smidian. I think that that's a poor comparison. Because it always felt like that game was limited by its 2D implementation, and 3D gave GTA new room to live for the kind of game that it was. I don't think that that's going to be true here. I don't think that anybody wants to play Diablo like they're playing Skyrim. It just fundamentally changes the pace and the feel of those games. I don't know. I could be wrong. Y'all may be saying, Scott, you're an idiot, but...
people
less than a
say
month.
That all the time anyways.
Well,
hey,
wrong.
Scott.
Yeah.
We should talk about Diablo more, but I think you don't have WoW Classic in the notes. You didn't talk about it.
I forgot to mention that. All right, what do we know?
Talking about BlizzCon.
Yeah, what do we know? What are we doing? Tell me about it.
So Classic. You know WoW Classic. It's the, well, everyone knows. Basically, there's going to be a demo of WoW Classic playable at BlizzCon, and it is included in the BlizzCon virtual ticket. No. Oh, actually, Town Crier, there's a question about this, so maybe we can address that there. Yeah, let's address it there. Let's just finish talking about Diablo.
Okay.
I think it's going to be a puzzle game.
Wait, the King acquisition finally kicks in and we get the gem matching.
A free to play mobile puzzle game, Diablo themed, where you have to match different types of demons.
No, legendary gems. They already got the gems. Just do the gems. Right?
Yeah, but that wouldn't be original, Scott.
No, it wouldn't be. But I'm telling you right now, we joke about this, and we've joked about it before when King got acquisition by Activision. A lot of acquisition and Activision. Anyway, when that happened, I said it then, and I'll say it today. If that very unlikely scenario happens, I'll play the crap out of it. Like, you could just do it tomorrow and say, hey, it's Candy Crush with a Diablo skin. I'd lose my mind. That's how big of a fanboy I am about this series. So
that's how big the check Blizzard is cutting you is. No, that's too far. I'm sorry, Scott.
It's like one of those big novelty checks you get when Clearinghouse comes to your house. It barely fits in my pocket. All right. Well, we'll see. We got less than a month, and we'll know the answer to all of these things and more.
I am very excited.
And when I say more, I actually mean more. Real quick, hey, before we get to your emails, and I'm very excited to get to them, I want to talk to you about Nighthawk Pro Gaming from Netgear. I have one of these routers. It's fantastic. How fantastic? It's rated 2018's top performing gaming router by PC Gamer and IGN. There's really no question that online gaming demands a stable and low latency connection. You've all learned that over time, right? Running multiple connected devices will cause network congestion. That's just the way it is, and most gateways simply can't handle that. Switching your existing gateway or router to an XR500 gaming router will improve your online gaming connectivity. It's the easiest way to improve your online gaming experience, and it has the biggest impact. I found this to be true. Life got better for me. You shouldn't have to compete with other online services, or devices rather, for bandwidth. Save the competition for the game. This router creates an express lane just for your gaming. It gives you incredible speed and no lag. With the high-performance gaming router, you have complete control over your gaming experience. The XR500 is purpose-built to lower your ping, stabilize your connection, and help you game at incredible speeds. Keep your game alive with features like geo-filtering, traffic prioritization, and device management, to name a few. The Nighthawk Pro Gaming Router transforms your gaming experience and gives you the power to win. Visit netgear.com/MPG. That's netgear.com/MPG and learn how you can join the no lag crew. All right, let's let's do one of these.
Hear ye, hear ye.
Why, it's the Town Crier.
I'm gonna get myself in trouble here. It is the Town Crier. theinstance@gmail.com is the email address. theinstance@gmail.com. Chris wrote in, says this, hi, Scott, and whomever decides to show up for work today. It says, LOL, just kidding. I am and have been a Blizzard zealot since 1997. I assume he means a Protoss zealot is what he means, right? He's been a zealot? Okay.
Yeah.
That would have been the beta for StarCraft.
When did StarCraft come out?
A year later. So it had to be like beta or alpha. Anyway, plus zealots don't last very long. They're kind of your first unit, and they go and go into smoke. Anyway,
you know what? You don't choose your condition when you're born.
No, it chooses you. So who are we to judge? Anyway, it says, but two things have concerned me this year. Number one, raising the cost of the physical collector's edition while removing the art book, mouse pad, and DVD. That was also Legion, right? I thought Legion.
No, I think this is the first year they don't have an art book. I'm not sure on the mouse pad. I could go.
That's why Garrett was so pissed, because Garrett buys those for the art book. That's all he cares about. Mm-hmm. And then it says, number two, raising the cost of the virtual ticket and taking away the WoW pet and mount. I just think it's unfair And if the next physical collector's edition of WoW is $100 with none of those items in it, excuse me, that we're used to, and the next virtual ticket has no WoW pad or mount, I will not be purchasing them. What are your feelings about this? Best regards, Chris. Well, first of all, Chris, thank you for approaching it with logical questions not intended to create a flame war, because that's all I've heard from people about this. And it's been very hard to have reasonable conversations with people. So I'm glad that you approached it this way. We should definitely talk about it. Number one, the book and the mouse pad and DVD. I think that sucks. I think having less in those is a bad idea. And it may even be a strategy for Blizzard to eventually be rid of such things, because it's a big, weird part of games that maybe are going away one day. So, yes, I think you still paying $100 for a collector's edition that is not up to the standards of previous expectations of what a collector's edition from WoW is a bummer. Let's hit that one first. Patrick, do you agree? Disagree?
Yeah, I think it's not as cool. I mean, there's no art book, but there's a very pretty novella, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of replaces it. I understand it's not the same thing. The mouse pad is really kind of whatever, you know, mouse pads. The DVD, I mean, you don't need the DVD itself, but the making of was always interesting. But after like 10 expansions, I understand it starts becoming very similar to what they said the time before. Yeah. It's still nice to have. I love those things. That's why I get the virtual ticket. It's because I love the inner workings of the designing of a game. So I enjoyed those, and I always watched them when I finished the initial campaign. I think the right way of approaching this, though, is the way you are approaching it, Chris, is if you don't like it, if it's not worth it for you, then don't buy it.
Yeah.
There is a fair argument that, you know, you have all of your collector's editions, and you want to keep the collection. So you kind of feel like you have to buy it, but you don't want to because it's not worth it. But I think if you don't want it, then don't buy it.
Yeah.
It sucks, but
there's also, well, okay, I'm in agreement with you. And actually, I think his position on that is correct. And I think if you don't buy it and enough people don't, that's how business works. The market will correct itself. Blizzard will have to figure out something to do. So whatever the outcome of that is, I think it sucks. I think if it was a little cheaper, if, like you said, it's $89 this year, that may have been easier to swallow or something. But I don't know. I didn't do it because these things were missing. And so I would understand why somebody else wouldn't. It's the second issue that I maybe have an issue with, raising the cost of the virtual ticket and taking away the WoW pet and mount. While I don't love the price raise, I think that's just, you know, inflation over time. BlizzCon tickets themselves go up, although they didn't this year, but that's not that unusual. The WoW pet and mount, though, have never been a guaranteed thing in every BlizzCon since the virtual ticket became a thing.
Well, we got one every year. I think it's fair to say it's expected.
It is expected, but it's not been there every time. There was a year where we didn't have a mount.
Really?
From the VT specifically. And I can't remember which year, so now I'm going to have to find out. But anyway, even if that was the case, then we had it every single year. Blizzard's argument would be, well, those you're getting the virtual ticket. Those are just add-ons. And the buyer might say, well, I don't even watch the virtual ticket. I just want that $49 pet and mount, which is a pretty good value compared to what you'd have to pay for a mount and pet in the store. And they're also exclusive to this one event. I think that the problem I have here is that the virtual ticket is the virtual ticket, and these are add-ons. I suppose you have an argument if you'd look at it the other way, which is the add-ons are what matter to you. Screw the virtual ticket. So I understand your pain, but I also just think Blizzard has a little more land to stand on there, because the expectation is they've only been doing the VT since what, 2013?
I think in this case, yeah, they definitely have more legs to stand on, because you do get items. You get the right, very ornate banners, and you get the Horde and Alliance cloaks, which look pretty cool. It's not a pet and a mount, but again, they've done pets and mounts for years and years. I think it's okay that they're not doing that in the same way. You're still getting items. And you are also getting the what I mentioned earlier, the access to the WoW Classic demo. And that is pretty huge, you know. The goal of the virtual ticket is to give you as much of the experience of BlizzCon as you can, as they can, without you actually physically being there. Mm. And the main draw of that, I think, was and still is you being able to watch all of the panels, which is, to me, 90% of the reason to get the virtual ticket. The pets and mounts, I know some people were buying the virtual ticket for that. But then, you know, if that's the only reason you're getting it for, then don't get it. Yeah. Again, it's that, you know, Taliesin and Evitel, a YouTube channel I love, was describing it as Schrodinger's Blizzard.
You really it's do love those guys, by the way. Patrick sits naked and watches those videos, and it's really weird. Anyway, go ahead.
They're funny and wholesome and cute. And anyway, they were saying Blizzard is being accused of making these things less appealing and not worth the money, and at the same time, making people want it so much that they would be willing to be paying the money anyway, right?
Yeah.
And I think that is unfair to put on Blizzard. If you don't think it's worth the money,
shouldn't get it. Yeah, you know? I agree.
And that WoW Classic demo, as cool as it's going to be, it's going to be 20 minutes max. Mm-hmm. You can watch this on Twitch. Everyone's going to be streaming it. If you don't think it's worth it, don't buy it. And probably it's not going to be worth it. That's not the reason you buy the virtual ticket. We've done those demos at every BlizzCon.
Yeah.
And they're usually 20 minutes experiences max.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they announce a new Diablo game, and there's a demo on the show floor, and that demo is available to people buying the virtual ticket,
yeah,
then I think everyone is going to think it's worth
it. Then it's worth it again. Yeah. The worth part is, you know, can fluctuate. Is it a bummer? Yes, I agree 100%. This is a total bummer. How do you show Blizzard that you think it's a bummer? You don't buy it. And if you were buying this just for the pet and the mount, don't do that, because there's no pet and mount. You're buying nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
Then.
It's very simple. Like, if the pet and mount are your motivation.
Yeah. But I don't want it to sound like we're saying, well, then don't buy it then. If you don't, like, I understand you still have a beef, and you should be able to express that beef. And it's a beef I have. Listen, if I didn't care, I mean, I'd buy the virtual ticket if I wasn't going, because I care about the stage stuff. I want to hear everything. But if I didn't and it was just for the items, I wouldn't buy it either. I'm with you, dude. This bugs me, Chris. I don't like it. It's more money, and I'm getting less stuff. So why would I pay for that if those were my driving factors to getting it in the first place? Sure. So it's weird, because I totally agree with this motivation, but at the same time, it really is on us to buy it or not. Like, just show Blizzard, do you think this is too much? So don't buy it.
You could say we're going to BlizzCon and we're not getting a WoW pet and mount because it's not included in the price of the ticket.
Right.
That is, you know, the reason it's in the virtual ticket is that, if you remember, before there was a virtual ticket, you would get those kinds of things when you would go to BlizzCon. And the goal of the virtual ticket was to bring them to you as well, and to make lots of money for Blizzard.
Yeah.
Because don't get me wrong, this is Grand Theft virtual ticket. There's a lot of people who are going to want to play the demo of the WoW Classic servers, and who are going to pay the money just for that. It's going to be the money of a full-priced game, almost, just for a 20 minutes demo. What I'm trying to tell you is, don't fall for it. If that's your only reason, don't buy it.
Yeah.
The reason you do it, what we all do, fans of Blizzard, when we go to BlizzCon, we want to see all of the panels. So what we do is we go back at the hotel when we're there, and we watch the panels actually in our hotel rooms. I know many of us do that before sleeping for a couple of hours and doing it again the next day.
Yeah.
That's the core reason. And I'm really glad I'm not going to be there. That's not true. I'm super sad.
I'm sad,
but
too.
But I'm glad I'm not going to be there.
I hate
because
that.
Because we can watch the panels.
I hate that. I want you I want you near me. I want your aura with me. It doesn't feel right.
You know what? I will be texting with you all the way through the opening ceremony and going, oh, my God, oh, my God.
I'm good. All right. I will feel – you can text me, too, just to make me feel better.
Maybe I'll stream it. you know what? Maybe I'll be streaming my reaction to the opening ceremony.
Hey, now that's an inexpensive virtual ticket, you guys. You follow Patrick there on Twitch. Go. You can watch his reactions, and he will give you a mount and a pet. There, you heard me say it. He'll give it to you.
Well, I mean,
oh, maybe not.
The mount and the pet of my heart.
I've said too much. He'll let you mount him. What? Wait. All right. Never mind. Said that.
What?
I don't know. What are you saying? I'm not saying anything. Hey.
No, I'm saying it depends how good you look. That's all. I'm superficial.
Oh, I see. Very superficial. Thanks, Chris, for your email. Theinstance@gmail.com is the email address to send it to. And we've got more shows before the end of the month and before BlizzCon. So please keep them coming. There are big things in the works that I can't talk about. But we'll let you know soon. I think that's it. I was talking to Chris yesterday. We are absolutely before the end of the year, probably sometime in November, post BlizzCon. He and I will be sitting down for a third interview. And this time talking about, he really wants to talk about his life and how it coincided with the creation of Cataclysm and then Mists of Pandaria. And everyone's always kind of joked about that. Because if you're familiar with his personal life, you know that he went through, you know, some stuff. But he's going to give us specifics because it's way more interesting than you think. So that's coming up sometime in a little more than a month from now, sometime post BlizzCon. So we'll keep you informed on that.
I know Chris is cool and all, but what really would be interesting would be to talk about the intersection of my life and the creation of Cataclysm and Mists of Pandaria. So if you want to do that, Scott, I would be open to
it. Let's do that instead. Just forget it. Chris, sorry, yeah. you're off the schedule. It's Patrick and his story of how those two expansions intersected.
There was stuff
in his
happening,
life.
Man. I'm telling you.
Yeah, you went through some stuff as well. Maybe we all did. That's why this is going to be great. So that's coming up. And there's one other thing I was going to mention. The writer of the book. I always forget his name. Stats. Gosh dang it. He and I are going to also talk post-launch of the book, now that that's all over with. So we'll be doing a little bit of that. So there's a lot of stuff coming up before the end of the year here on The Instance, and a few other things I probably can't mention yet. Exciting stuff at Blizzard, and we're going to find out so much more in just less than a month. Before we get out of here, Patrick Bejaw does other things on the internet that are all very exciting and cool, and he would like to now tell you what those are. Patrick, take it away.
Yeah. Sure. Icy Veins podcast, I mentioned a couple of times on the show. If you like Blizzard news, I guess you do because you're listening to this. Slightly different format. Go check it out. I think you would enjoy it. And if you enjoy games in general, you might want to listen to Pixels. It's a gaming news show where we cover everything that's happening in the gaming world. If you want to hear about my renewed love for Destiny 2, you can hear actually Terpster and myself discuss it on the latest episode. So go to your podcast app, search for Pixels, subscribe, listen, be happy. You're welcome.
Oh my gosh, that's quite the package. For the rest of y'all, if you are interested in following more that happens on this show, you can find it at theinstance.net. You're encouraged to do that. You can also follow us on Twitter @InstanceShow, @ScottJohnson, @_T and @NotPatrick, of course. Garrett Art for Garrett. He's out doing busy stuff, so we're not going to see him for a couple of weeks, but hopefully soon. It's going to do it for us. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time.
Bye, Patrick. Bye.
Any similarity to Bexley Tron is purely coincidental. Bexley Tron here to answer your Galaxy of Warcraft questions in this 39,483rd edition of Ask Bexley Tron. This question is about the latest expansion. THX1138 writes, "Dear Bexley Tron, what can you tell us about the upcoming expansion? As you know, the upcoming expansion, the Lich of the Pandarian Mist Legion in the Burning Cataclysm and Gnomes, is the 256th expansion of Galaxy of Warcraft from the United Republic of Blizzard Entertainment. Details of the expansion are mostly rumors right now, but here is the information I've been able to gather so far. You'll be leveling your way up to level 2620 while you take on the really much older than the old gods, who are trying to take down not just Azeroth 6, but also Azeroth 1 through 5. And while you battle your way up those next 10 levels, you'll finally be able to go back to the Undercity now that the blight that was put there centuries ago has dissipated. You'll go to fight in the Stormwind Space Station as it does battle with the Orgrimmar Space Station. You'll be able to get the new transdimensional mount for getting the what a really, really exhausting and handed down from generation to generation long strange trip this has been achievement. And there's even a rumor that we will be getting the dance studio and three more slots in that first backpack. Thank you for your inquiry. If you would like to see the flashing lights of Buxleytron, stop by the exhibit at the United Republic of Blizzard Entertainment, just off the coast of Appalfornia. You can listen to the archives if you can find where they buried all the old episodes.
Buxleytron is credits, friend!
Greetings, gamers. This is MuCow, your guide in treating a common gamer condition called altitis. Despite first impressions this expansion, there is room for alts. While Legion heavily encourages us to go alt-crazy in a class-based way, Battle for Azeroth is going all in on factions. It is true that focusing on your main character is going to be the best bang for your buck, but you are missing out on the other half of the story if you aren't playing both sides. If you haven't already done so, the order I've found most fitting was to do the Horde opening quest line to their new faction city, and then do the same on the Alliance. This seems to follow the flow of the full story's timeline, without much backtracking. I then found that resuming the Horde story to its completion and then working on the Alliance side made the most sense chronologically. The Alliance will then see even more preemptive actions from the Horde as they continue their story, further confirming their intentions. This seems to echo the events of the pre-expansion patch content, and we know how Blizzard loves to telegraph how an encounter will play out. I'm sure as we look back on these events, there will be no doubt that the Horde shot first. If you have questions, tips, or want to discuss a topic further, find us on Twitter at altitis.net, and show notes can be found on our website, altitis.net. On behalf of the Alt Army, we hope you find this information useful in the treatment of your altitis.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.